And it is time to look through the window of baseball with Bruce Jenkins, brought to you by Marvin Windows and Doors and Truett and White, the professional builder's choice. Bruce, good morning.
Hey, Bruce.
Hey, how you guys doing? Glad to hear you got out of the women's bathroom in time to do the show, huh?
You know, really. And, I'll say I'm going to leave it with Pat.
Okay.
I'm
going to
say, Pat, that's yours.
I'll take it. I'll take every minute of it.
You guys get around, I tell you.
You know something? We actually do.
Yeah.
I must tell you.
Well, Marty's is actually like Charlie's Angels. Remember Charlie's Angels?
Sure.
Out here, it's Marty's funny. Angels, and that's no lie.
It's funny. It's funny. Hey, as we go through this day today, and again, I'm thinking about Petit. I still can't get over that one. It's so rare to see these potential perfect games, and I saw the list the other day of the perfect games, and I just looked at Milt Pappas and Milt Wilcox. Jerry Hairston broke that one up, of course, the dad of the Hairston boys. It is still that moment, as a baseball fan, Bruce, when you come to the game, you never know what you're going to see, and it plays out every single day.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the last thing anybody expected, and it's so funny when a guy is one out away from a no-hitter or a perfect game, it's happened so many times over the years that you almost expect a base hit. It's just, it's sitting right there, and you can almost touch it and feel it, and then it goes away. But that was especially tough. But, you know, in a way, I think it's okay that Petit winds up with a complete game, you know, one hitter, instead of a perfect game, because, I mean, anyone who pitches a perfect game may never get to that point again. But for a guy like that, you know, he would always be measured up against the perfect game. It's like, you know, where's Mr. Perfecto now when he's down 8-0 in the fourth, you know? And I don't think it's a terrible tragedy. I think it's just plenty good enough that he pitched a great game in front of a really spirited crowd and got himself into the picture.
Yeah, you don't want him to become Bobo Holloman.
Yeah.
of the St. Louis. He pitched like his third game, pitched a no-hitter, and that was his career,
yeah.
Basically.
Mike Warren pitched
right,
a no-hitter.
That's right.
Yeah.
It ended right. You know, it's funny. As you get into this time of year, you do see those kind of three or four. Remember the A's? Come on, would they have like a five-pitcher, a no-hitter?
Yeah.
Remember,
yeah.
With Blue Moon was in the middle of that?
Yeah, absolutely. The whole staff took part in that thing.
Yeah. So, in September, you kind of see some weird things because you have so many players up and so many different pitchers. Things can happen.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot more. I think it's going to be really interesting when you look at the National League Central with those three teams going at it, trying to stay out of the wild card game. You got a guy like Billy Hamilton. John Shea wrote about him today. You know, he's a guy who's brought up because there's extra room on the roster. Meanwhile, this guy's like a game changer. He's like Dusty said, he's a guy that everybody in the park knows he's going to steal, and he still steals.
Yeah.
And he's going to be doing this all the way down the stretch, and maybe to the point where they put him on their postseason roster. So, yeah, these are the kind of things that really spice it up. We talked a little bit yesterday about the roster expansion. I think it's great. As long as you have equal amounts of players in the teams, I think it's fantastic. You see all these guys and get a little look at next year.
You know, Bruce, we were talking about the Billy Hamilton thing because John wrote about it, as did a guy for Sports Illustrated. And how come more teams don't value the stolen bases? I know that Billy Bean and the A's about 15 years ago thought that it was giving up and out or too risky, but it seems to cause so much damage. It just seems like more teams ought to enlist guys like Billy Hamilton, or at least guys that have speed, huh?
Well, you can't just be a runner because the rosters are so thin. I mean,
right.
25-man roster, if you got a 13-man pitching staff, you just can't afford to have a guy who can only run. And Hamilton's a marginal hitter. I'm not sure they think he's ever going to hit in the big leagues. He wasn't a really dynamic hitter in the minors, but I think if they'd come to their senses and allow 27-man rosters, which might even help getting rid of the DH, that's always been my dream, is that you could have a guy like Hamilton who just changes the game just in a flash.
Well, Herb Washington...
Yeah, well, Herb Washington's an example of why you don't do it, because he was very fast, but he wasn't a base runner. He was a track guy.
Yeah, he could go 60 yards very quickly. He just couldn't turn. That was the
he didn't have the instinct.
Well, you know, in these four-hour games you have today with the specialty pitchers like the great Javier Lopez that comes in usually for one at-bat, it seems to me you could have room for a guy that could go out there and put pressure on the opposing pitching staff. And it's kind of like Jadeveon Clowney. Even though he's not getting sacks in a football game, he's just putting so much pressure on the other team, has to think about it. He's still a factor, and a good base dealer seems to have that could have that purpose too.
Yeah, I think it'd be so much more interesting if you had expanded rosters all the way through the season. I mean, you could have, like, you look at the Giants bench, it's full of guys who can do a lot of things, but none of them do anything extremely well, really, when you look at it. But they can all do a bunch of things. And but if you had room for a guy who's a base running specialist, or you had a guy who's just a big lunk who could come in and hit a three-run homer, you'd never put him in the field, but this guy, you know, Matt Stairs, you know.
Yeah.
That's good. I think it would be way more interesting and put a lot less pressure on managers, especially in the National League when they get in these wild extra-inning games.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. You're right. And Bruce, Pat, tell me, we had a special guest on today that you know, Bruce.
Joe Conte was on, and he wrote a book about the rivalry heard around the world, the Dodgers-Giants feud. From coast to coast, and you did the forward, Bruce, and with the Giants heading down to L.A. later this week, what a perfect person, because you spent time in L.A. to do the forward.
Yes, I was quite honored that he asked me to do that. I kind of shared my experience of how really, you know, Dodgers, Giants, and the whole teams moving west, you know, changed my life and shaped my whole future. I mean, you know, growing up with the Dodgers and Vince Scully and the Giants coming to town with Mays and McCovey, I mean, that's when I knew that, you know, that was the most important thing in my life, and it still is. I mean, and Steve Dilbeck wrote another forward from the L.A. angle, and I'm not sure who wrote the backward, but I wrote a forward.
You got a lot of people on the back cover, though, right?
Yeah, Brian Murphy and Bruce and Steve are both on it, and John Shea all are on the back jacket here. It's a good-looking book, Bruce.
Yeah, it is. You know, he did an awful lot of work. He basically chronicles the whole history of the rivalry. It's a great reference material if you're looking for details on a certain game that you remember. You might not remember everything that happened, and it's just a very valuable addition to the library.
You know, it's funny, as we're thinking, Bruce Jenkins, of course, is with us. There's something about baseball books. And look, you've studied baseball as long as I have, Pat. You're a passionate fan about baseball as well. Give me a good baseball book, and it is a tremendous gift to me.
Well, you gave me a great one, Marty, the book called Bushville Wins.
Oh, yeah.
I'd heard about this book, and you lent me your copy. I still have it. I mean, it's whatever it may be, if it's something that you can relate to, something that you lived through, and now you're reading about it and in much more detail, and with, you know, with quotes from people and really bringing it to life, the inside stories, whatever it may be. This happens to be the 1957 Milwaukee Braves pennant race, but which for me is like a complete treasure. Somebody else, not at all. But I mean, you know, right now the Bill King book is out, and a lot of people who enjoyed you know, Bill King's work with the A's are going to love that book. It's not only about baseball, but you're right, it's a great thing.
Yeah, does baseball make for the best books? Is it the best platform in terms of sports?
Sports?
Because I've heard the old saying, the smaller the ball, the better the story.
Yeah, I think, baseball and golf. Dan Jenkins has written some unbelievable books on golf. Just some of the best books ever written about anything. I don't know about how the size of the ball relates to it, but, I mean, anytime you have a little time to think, as opposed to a madcap basketball game or the pace of NFL, think and analyze and figure things out and try to look at things from different angles and see the humor and stuff. You know, it lends itself to good writing.
And we all can transport ourselves back to those moments or those seasons or those teams. And to see it from a different angle, it's pretty good. I personally like horse racing books.
Hmm.
Seabiscuit book.
Sure, yeah.
It's good.
I like to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've read whatever ones have come out. I kind of like those, and I like talking to Sam Spear.
Well, who doesn't? Mm-hmm.
About,
that's my guy.
You know, and Sam, of course, was a great jockey. You know, he rode in the Kentucky Derby. No, I'm only kidding. He did.
Yeah, one of the greatest Sports Illustrated pieces of all time was was written by William Knack now the horse's name is escaping, one of the greatest horses of all time, fairly recently. Who am I thinking of?
Smarty Jones?
Secretariat, not
Secretariat, yeah.
Very good, Marty.
You know, and I don't even follow horse racing, and that piece was absolutely riveting. You're right. It's funny because football writing does nothing for me, for the most part. There have been some very good books written, but it's a visual thing. It's to be enjoyed at the time.
Yeah, it's more of a sort of a biographical, statistical book of the undefeated Dolphins or the 49ers Super Bowl seasons. You may get transported back to a play or two.
Okay.
But when you get a baseball season that unfolds in 162 games and all that's ups and downs and the tribulations that this river takes you through, you go back to it in the book.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's always about the accomplishment for me, but baseball does lend itself. And I think you nailed it, Bruce. Just the pace of the game is
what
just
about
perfect.
Basketball. Any basketball books?
Ah.
Wilt Chamberlain? I don't know.
The City Game. Pete Axelm. Great basketball book. Books about Connie Hawkins. Yeah, books about people. But Gary Pomerantz wrote a fabulous book about Wilt Chamberlain. Man, you talk about some depth of reporting. And way more so than recollection of seasons. That doesn't really work. But to focus on people, you know, Bill Russell wrote a couple of fantastic books. That's where basketball works the best.
Boy, very good. I was just thinking of one more before we leave the subject. Remember, Bruce, I told you the book about the fabulous trader, Frank Lane?
Oh, yeah.
And Ed Vandenberg, I think that for the Chicago Sun-Times or Tribune, I forget which one, wrote it. And to me, I couldn't put it down. I could not put it down because that's an era of baseball that is no longer here. But it showed you before free agency how players would be moved just relentlessly.
Yeah.
We'd sit down at dinner and bring out a napkin and I'm going to give you six and you give me seven and we'll do this.
Exactly.
We'll announce it in the morning and then someone goes out that night and hits two home runs and the guy calls it, no, the deal's off. fabulous.
Two guys at a bar with a cocktail napkin and a prayer, you know.
And that's the way a six or seven player trade went down.
That's the way it went down.
Wow. Well, what's up for you today?
Oh, a lot going on today. I'm watching the Raiders live, the U.S. Open Women's Finals coming up. Of course, the 49ers is a big deal. The way this is going, I'll probably catch the Giants on tape around 10 o'clock tonight.
Well, we said you're the ultimate. I think I said this last night. You're the ultimate couch potato. I think I did say that last night.
Yeah, it's not a flattering term, but I'll go with it.
it's actually a professional term for you because
sure.
I think you could write off the cost of the couch.
Yeah, absolutely. You can get your different varieties. You get your French fries. You got your Idaho potatoes. You're baked, you know.
I think you talk to your accountant. There's a tax write-off in what you do by sitting on that couch with condiments.
I'm writing off the mustard as we speak.
Well, look how Cal's defense rewarded Bruce for going out to Memorial Coliseum yesterday.
We had a headline. Right? Boy, the headline was great today.
Yeah,
Bruce.
Yeah, that summed it up well. I mean, the first play... I think the second play of the game went for 81 yards, and Portland State gets it back, and they go for 75 yards, and that's called back for a penalty. But no matter, they charge right down again for another touchdown. I mean, they were just moving the ball at will. It was pretty disturbing for a Cal fan, but they've got so much offense that they can overcome it. Against Ohio State, I don't know about that. But
That's not going to be pretty.
That'll be tough.
But the headline said Cal D gets an F. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and Bruce, he took the gloves off and was whacked him around a little bit. As you said, the defense,
it was alarmingly bad. I mean, anybody can give up a big play here and there, but you know, Portland State at Cal, that just can't happen. They can't. Yeah. They had 525 yards after three quarters. I mean, that's just a little much.
That's an old blue talking.
That's right.
Yeah, and that coach, Sonny Dykes was pretty riled. I mean, it wasn't any big mystery to him. I mean, he chewed the guys out at halftime, and he knows it's not acceptable. So,
all right. Hey, how are the Raiders doing?
I'm not sure right now. They were behind 14-7.
Right.
I don't have the sound. It looks like it's halftime right now. I think it might still be 14-7 Indy. So they're hanging in there.
Not bad. We don't want to get Dave Fleming upset if Luck has trouble here. Dave Fleming will have trouble doing the broadcast.
I know.
Today.
Be hot and bothered.
Yeah, you know that.
officially 14-7 here at the start of the third.
All right. Bruce, thank you so much as always, and we'll talk to you next
week. Thanks,
weekend.
Bruce.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Pleasure.
That's very good stuff.